University Radio York presents Down the Black Trail, an audio drama by James Persglove.
In 2009, a URY member by the name of Robert Marshall disappeared. A year later, his body was discovered in a local woodland called Slater Woods under mysterious circumstances. Now, 15 years later, I have discovered recordings of a documentary that Robert was producing that explored a local urban legend. Supposedly, in the woods, there is a mysterious trail that appears to you when you are alone, and that if you go down, you don't come back. This trail has been dubbed the Black Trail, after the supposed colour of its trail markers. I believe that by editing this documentary together, I can uncover the truth of Robert's disappearance, and find out what lies down the Black Trail.
Welcome back to another exciting episode of Down the Black Trail, and this episode is a bit of a strange one. Our previous few episodes have focused pretty directly on the Black Trail, a mysterious path in Slater Woods that isn't always there. However, this episode's going to be a little different. You see, recently a story fell into our lap that, at first glance, doesn't have anything to do with the Black Trail. But don't be disappointed, because even though this episode won't be answering any questions about the Black Trail, it will more than make up for it with the question that it asks. Is the Black Trail the only paranormal phenomenon in Slater Woods? A few months ago, an article was released calling for a safety inspection of Slater Woods. According to said article, people who walked their dog frequently in Slater Woods were more than twice as likely to report their dogs as missing. We saw this article when it came out, as we were already investigating the woods at this point, but we weren't really sure if it was relevant. However, in our second episode, we interviewed someone who had a close encounter with the Black Trail that began with their dog running away. This got us thinking. Maybe this statistic and the Black Trail are linked in some way. So we did what we always do in situations like this. We sent Rob back out to Slater Woods to ask around and find out if anyone had lost a dog in the woods and was willing to talk to us. After talking to a few people, it quickly became apparent that there was a bit of a flaw in this plan. People who lose dogs in the woods generally don't come back to those woods for a leisurely stroll. This rather glaring oversight did not, however, stop Rob from getting results. While none of the walkers in the park had lost dogs or knew of anyone with a lost dog, this was not the case for the staff at the refreshment cabin. According to them, the previous week a woman had lost her German Shepherd while on a walk in the woods, and she'd left a phone number with the cabin so that they could be contacted if anyone found her dog. Obviously, they weren't willing to just give us her number, however, they did agree to pass on our email address. A few days later, we received an email from someone called Kimber Fenner, inviting us to visit for an interview about her missing dog. So as usual, we sent Rob, our premier investigative journalist.
I'm currently sitting in the living room of a small bungalow somewhere near to Clifton Moor. It's a nice little place. A sort of modern one-bedroom house you could dream of moving into after graduating. It has a combined kitchen and a living room at the back of the house with a large glass door, which leads into a small but well-maintained garden. In the other direction, there's a corridor which connects the living room to the bedroom and front door. And I'm told the bedroom has a large ensuite, although I've not yet seen it in person. The resident of this rather nice house is a person by the name of Kimber Fenner. Kimber graduated from the University of York with a Master's in Finance at the end of 2003, and she's been living in York ever since. She's invited me here today to talk about her German Shepherd, Toby, who was lost in Slater Woods a few weeks ago. Would you say all that's correct?
I think I would, yes. I definitely appreciate you leaving out how messy the place is at the moment.
Well, no problem, although I fear you may have let the cat out of the bag there yourself.
Oh.
Now, before we begin, would you be able to tell us a little bit about your dog?
His name was Toby. He was a German Shepherd. I adopted him not long after I graduated when I first moved in here. I was fortunate enough to be able to afford to live alone. However, I realised quite quickly that being alone made me a little on edge. So I went and adopted Toby to keep me company.
And a couple of weeks ago, you lost Toby in Slater Woods?
Yeah, sort of.
Sort of?
It's a bit of a long story.
That's not a problem. I'm here for long stories.
Okay, right. So most of the time since I adopted him, I've just walked Toby on the roads around here. There's not a big park and I've not had a chance to take him much further afield. That was until summer last year when I finally bought my first car. So it meant I started driving Toby to different places where I could go for a proper walk, somewhere green. I don't remember who it was, but somebody suggested Slater Woods to me. And I was intrigued, so on 2 weeks ago on Sunday, I drove Toby out there and decided to take a look. I'd picked a good day for it. There was a little cafe thingy open where you could get a hot chocolate, and there was a thick layer of snow over the woods. It felt very festive. The staff at the cafe recommended that I follow the blue trail, so I put Toby on his lead and took him for a walk. I know a lot of people let their dogs off the lead in places like this, but since most of the time I've had Toby, I've been walking him with a lead, so usually just slip into that habit. The walk started pretty normal. Toby was trotting along happily as can be, like he usually did. Then, about 15 minutes into the walk, he stopped and his ears perked up for a moment. Then, a moment later, he ran at full speed straight down the path. It took me so off guard, I fumbled the lead. I started chasing after him and calling for him, but he didn't even slow down. I don't think I've ever seen him run so fast, and in an instant, he was out of my sight. At first, I panicked that I'd lost him, and then I realised I was lucky because there was a thick layer of snow on the path. I could very easily follow his footsteps. So I did this, figuring at some point he would have tired himself out. Surprisingly, he'd kept mostly to the path, so following him wasn't too difficult. I followed these footsteps for about 5 minutes before I reached the end. At one point, the footsteps suddenly veered off from the main path into a thick patch of bracken. But it was strange. The bracken had a thick layer of snow covering it, which was completely undisturbed. I was at a loss. I called out for him a few times, but there was no trace of him.
So what did you do then?
Well, at first I just kept pacing around that part of the trail. After a while I realised that he wasn't near there, so I decided to keep walking down the trail and calling his name. Obviously, there was no luck there. When I got back to the car park, I asked if they'd seen a German Shepherd around there. Nobody had, so I gave my number to the cafe and asked them to call me if they saw him. Then I went back into the woods and kept walking around calling for Toby. I think I must have walked every path in those woods twice. No luck. It was like Toby had just vanished. Eventually it was so dark I gave up, drove home and reported Toby missing.
So, when I asked if you'd lost Toby in Slater Woods, you said, sort of? I don't want to be a contrarian, but that doesn't seem very sort of to me.
I told you it was a long story. This is just the start. That wasn't the last time I saw Toby. As I said, I went home and reported Toby missing that night. The next morning, I drove back to Slater Woods to keep looking for him. I thought that with this only being the day after, there might still be a slim chance I'd find him safe and sound. I got to the woods just as the sun came up. It was a Monday, so there was no one around. Including me, I think there were only 3 cars in the car park. I started walking down the main trail and calling his name. I think my plan was to walk back to the spot where I'd lost him and start there. As it turned out, that wasn't necessary. After only a couple of minutes of calling his name, I heard some rustling in the trees to my left. I looked over and I saw Toby walking out of the trees with his leads trailing along the ground behind him. I was so relieved to see him again. I knelt down and hugged him. He felt freezing, although that made sense as he'd spent a night in the woods. But then I noticed something strange. He was clean, like really pristinely clean. There were no dirty patches on his fur, no sticks or needles. It was like he'd been freshly groomed. I didn't think too much of it at the time. I think I just assumed that because it had been snowing, he wouldn't have gotten dirty, but looking back, it does seem strange. So I grabbed his lead and wrapped it a few times around my hand and then walked back to the car. I didn't need to. He was perfectly well behaved. Surprisingly so. See, I really love Toby, but he wasn't the easiest dog in the world. He was stubborn, disobedient, and barky. Oh my God, he was barky. He would bark at everything. Cyclists, people, other dogs, his own tail, anything that moved, and sometimes even the things that didn't. And he was completely untrainable. I tried for years to train him not to sit on the furniture to no avail, but when I found him in the woods, he was dead quiet. He got in the boot of my car without any fuss, even though I usually need to lure him in with a bit of cheese. He was completely quiet on the way home, even though he'd usually see cars through the window and bark at them. I remember feeling sad. I assumed he was just so tired and shaken from spending a night in the woods, he just didn't have the energy for any of that right now. Same when I got home. I gave him his favourite meal, dog food with sausage bits mixed in. He would usually wolf it down within seconds, but he sort of looked at it when I put it down. I sat on the sofa and put the TV on. He'd usually come over and sit on the sofa with me and snuggle up, but he just sat by his food bowl staring at me. That was all he did for the rest of the day. He stayed completely quiet and just followed me around the house. It was like he was a completely different dog.
This is probably a stupid question, but you're sure it was Toby?
No, that's not a stupid question at all. After I saw Toby acting so strange, I started to suspect the same thing. But I checked his collar and the lead, and they were both definitely the same ones he'd be wearing when he ran off. No, it was definitely the same dog. Definitely Toby.
So where is Toby now, then?
He's gone.
Gone?
Again, it's a long story. So I went to bed that night after finding Toby feeling uneasy. I was worried about him. He seemed so passive since he'd come back from the woods and he'd barely touched his food. I was worried and wasn't sure what to do about it or if there was anything I could do about it. Despite this, I eventually started to drift off, and just as I did, I heard something that jolted me awake in an instant. I heard the creak of a floorboard from over in the living room. I sat up and began listening closely. I heard another creak, this time closer, and then I started hearing footsteps moving down the corridor towards my room. They were slow, methodical, and heavy. They were far too heavy to have belonged to Toby. They had the unmistakable sound of human footsteps. I listened intently as they slowly crept down the corridor. I checked my bedside table for my phone and felt my blood go cold when I realised I'd left it in my coat pocket. I desperately tried to calm my breathing as I sat there, too scared to move, as I listened to the footsteps approaching. I heard them getting louder and louder until they stopped right outside my door. I froze and held my breath as much as I could in my panic, desperately trying to make as little noise as possible. I don't know how long I stayed like that. To me, it felt like hours, just sitting there, listening to my heart pounding and expecting the door to creak open at any moment. But it never did. After a while, I began to calm down and suspected I'd imagined the whole thing. I slipped out of bed as quietly as I could and tiptoed across the room. I slowly pressed my ear to the door to see if I could hear anything on the other side, but I couldn't. No breathing or rustling, nothing. I then called out, "Is somebody there?" while I pressed my weight against the door. Again, there was no response. Finally, I gathered up enough courage to open the door. I flung it open, half expecting to see an intruder and half expecting to see nothing at all. But it was neither of those things. Instead, sitting on the floor in front of the door and staring up from the dark was Toby.
So, you got scared by your dog?
Well, at the time, that was what I thought. I thought I'd just mistaken the sound of Toby wandering over for an intruder and overreacted. I was still shaken, though. I turned on every light in the house and then sat in the living room watching TV until the sun came up. The first thing next morning, I went out and bought a lock to put on my bedroom door.
But was that not a bit of an overreaction?
Well, at the time, I thought it probably was. It was just really to help ease my mind. Turns out it might have saved my life. Anyway, I returned to my life as usual after that. I noticed Toby had eaten all his food in the night, which helped put my mind at ease a little. He still wasn't behaving normally. He showed no interest in his toys or his meals. I took him for a walk around the block. After the fiasco in the woods, I wasn't keen on taking him further. He came obediently and quietly. The walk was much the same. He didn't seem to notice any of the cars or people that he would normally bark at. He just walked quietly in front of me the whole time. The rest of the day, he just sat on his bed and watched me intently while I went about my business. It was getting creepy. He'd been back for 2 days now and he still didn't seem any more like his old self. That night, when I went to bed, I felt a little better. I'd installed the lock and felt a little safer after having that on the door. I also learned from my mistakes last night and had my phone on the bedside table. I just started to drift off again when I heard the same footsteps I had the night before. I stopped and listened closer. I knew now that the footsteps were just Toby, but still, they didn't sound like dog's footsteps. They sounded like a human, and a heavy one at that. I got up and called out again. This time I felt protected by my lock. There was no response, just like the night before, and just like the night before, I couldn't hear anything on the other side of the door. So I unlocked it and peeked outside. There was Toby, looking straight up at me from the darkness, just as he had the night before. I shut the door and locked it and went back to bed. This routine continued for the rest of the week. I'd spend the day as normal while Toby would sit in the corner, watching me. I'd leave his food out but wouldn't see him eat it. At the end of the day, I'd go to bed and hear footsteps walking down the hall. I stopped bothering to get up and check it was Toby and would drift off to sleep. In the morning, I'd find Toby waiting outside my door and his food bowl empty.
But did the thought of your dog spending his night staring at your door not bother you?
Of course it did, but I didn't really know what I could do about it. That was until about a week in, I had an idea. I went out and bought a digital camera in the largest storage card they sold. Then, that night, I set it up at the end of the corridor and started filming. In the morning, I would see what Toby was doing outside my door all night. I got in bed and locked the door, as I had the last few nights. And as I started to drift off, I heard the footsteps slowly thud down the corridor and stop right outside my door, just as they had done every night before. Then I heard something I hadn't heard before, the sound of my doorknob slowly twisting. I shot up and immediately called 999. As you'd seen, my door had round, rather stiff doorknobs. I have to grip and twist just as hard to get them open myself. There was no way that Toby would have been able to do that with his paws. What happened next is fuzzy to me. I remember shouting at the person on the other side of the door to leave me alone while trying to answer the operative's question as fast as possible. I remember the door beginning to shake as whoever was on the other side tried to force their way inside. I remember locking myself in the ensuite and crying while the operator on the phone tried to reassure me that police were on their way, and I remember hearing the footsteps slowly retreat back up the corridor. I stayed in the ensuite until the police arrived. I was so terrified it took them 5 minutes to coax me out of there. They told me what they'd found. The back door was open. They suspected that was how the intruder had gotten in and out. I told them I'd locked it, but they seemed sceptical as there were no signs of a break-in. I think they suspected I was lying for insurance purposes, not that there was much point as almost nothing was taken. There were only two things missing. My digital camera and Toby. I told the police my dog had gone and they told me they'd keep a lookout for him, but they suspected he just ran out of the door after the intruder. Obviously, they never found him.
I'm so sorry. That sounds traumatic.
It's been hard for me since. I don't feel safe in my own home and I don't want to get a dog to make me feel safe. I don't feel safe anywhere, to be honest. I always feel like I'm being watched no matter where I go. But thank you for letting me talk about this. It's definitely helped to get it out in the open and to be taken seriously.
I guess you're welcome. Thank you for telling me. If you don't mind, I have one final question for you.
Go ahead.
Have you heard of the Black Trail? Or did you at any point see a trail marker with a black coloured band?
No. I don't think I have. It doesn't sound familiar, at least.
At the end of all these interviews, there is a rundown segment where Dan and Rob talk through the story to decide if it's real or not. In the previous episodes, I have edited these to the natural start and end. However, in this episode, there was some discussion at the start of the recording that I think is important not to be left out.
All right, we're recording.
Already? I don't really know what to say.
Well, how come?
I guess the point of this section is that we're trying to discuss if the story is real or not, right?
Yeah, well, also if it's paranormal or not.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I can talk about that without being rude to the interviewee. I don't think she lied to me, but also she... It didn't seem like she was all there, you know? She was strange. Like, this didn't get picked up on tape, but her house was covered in takeaway boxes and wine boxes, and she had four locks on the front door. Four. That's not normal. And I went to interview her at midday, right? She still had every single light in the house on. And constantly during the interview, she'd check over her shoulder, like she thought she was being watched.
Oh.
Oh, indeed. I don't know. I don't want to say on radio that this vulnerable, paranoid person seems untrustworthy, but I also don't want to lead the listeners on and say I believe something that I just don't.
Do you not think this paranoia makes sense considering what she just went through? I mean, assuming that any of that story's true, of course.
I mean, maybe. She just didn't seem right to me.
All right, well, here's what we'll do. I'll say why I believe her, and then you can just not disagree. Does that work?
All right, that works for me.
Okay, ready to go?
Yeah.
All right. 5, 4, 3. Our lead investigator, Rob, has just come back from his interview and is joining me in the studio now for our regular wrap-up segment. Today, we're going to discuss the story Kimber has just told us and what it tells us about the Black Trail. Shall I go first or do you want to?
I think I'll let you go first for once.
Well, usually we start by asking the question, is this story true? I'm very much inclined to think it is, which may come as a surprise to our long-term listeners, as this is very much the sort of over-the-top, spooky story I would normally be very suspect of. But in this case, I'm not, for one simple reason. We reached out to her first. If you're trying to spin up a scary story for a bit of fame or notoriety, you generally try and make it more accessible. What you don't do is give your phone number to a refreshments cabin in a small woodlands and hope a podcast series reaches out to you.
That's true. Although it's possible part of the story is true and Kimber embellished bits?
Well, that could be true, although if that were the case, surely you'd find a way to link that to the existing spooky story of the Black Trail.
Not if you don't know about it, and she claimed not to.
Okay, well, let's for a second assume it is true. Here's something that bothers me. I can't think of an explanation, or at least a non-paranormal one. The best I can come up with is a would-be murderer picked up the dog in the woods, planted a tracker in its collar, and then released it the day after. And then this murderer used that to track down the house and break in every night.
I've seen Swiss cheese with fewer holes than that explanation.
Okay, so that only leaves us with two options. She's lying, or something paranormal did happen here. And if that's the case, is it related to the Black Trail?
I do think there's some sort of link. The dog running away immediately reminds me of Eddie's story, where he saw the trail after his dog Ralph ran off. And less obviously, her dog came back from the woods and behaved differently, just like Ben Walker did last episode. I definitely think if it's real, it's connected.
Well, I guess there's only one way to find out, but you're going to have to wait until the next episode to find out just what that is.
That was the last recording from the folder I received from George. I believe that Dan and Rob had intended to make at least one more episode, but Rob disappeared before that could happen. After this episode, I did some research, as I normally would, this time searching for the name Kimber Fenner. Fortunately for me, it's a unique enough name that I only found a single match on social media. What I could glean from her profile is this. Kimber no longer lives in York. She's unmarried and doesn't have kids. She's still working in finance and has moved companies 3 times in the last 15 years. She doesn't seem to have many friends or hobbies, and her social media pages consist mostly of cat videos and diet recipes. I did, however, decide to drop her a message to see if she'd be interested in doing an interview via video call. To my surprise, she was more than happy to talk to me.
Hey, hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
And can you see me all right?
Yeah, perfectly clear. Actually, you look a little familiar. Will I recognise you from somewhere?
I don't think so. I generally like to keep myself to myself, you know?
Okay, well, maybe you just look similar to someone I know. Anyway, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you for asking. Although, I'm a bit confused why you'd want to interview me, of all people.
You actually gave an interview with us before, back in 2009? Do you remember that?
2009? I might remember that. Was it about my dog running off?
Yeah, that's the one. So I had some follow-up questions I wanted to ask you. I know it's a bit late.
Well, I've got some good and bad news for you.
Oh?
Good news, I'll be able to answer all of your questions. Bad news, this will be a short interview.
Okay, why is that?
I made it up.
So, what?
You're going to ask me the story about the monster in the corridor, right? I made that up.
You've never had a dog?
No, the stuff with my dog, what was his name? Toby. The stuff with him running off was true. I never found him again, though, and I certainly never had any monsters in the house.
So why would you lie about something like that?
Well, I'm not proud to admit it, obviously, but I wanted to be on the radio. And someone showing up from a paranormal podcast, I guess I thought I'd give them what they wanted. Sorry, you didn't think it was true, did you?
Well, I wasn't really sure, but I definitely wasn't expecting you to just admit to lying about it.
Well, there's no point lying about it now, is there?
No, I suppose not.
Did that answer all your questions?
I'm afraid it did. Well, thank you for your time, and if it helps, this interview will most likely make it onto the radio.
Oh, how exciting.
Yeah, thank you for your time again, and have a good evening.
That's no problem, and you too.
I didn't believe her for a second. It didn't make sense for her story to be a lie. It connects too well to the other episodes. Toby ran away just like Ralph did, and then came back a day later just like Ben did. It's too perfect to be a coincidence. And there was no way Kimber could have heard those stories at the time the interview was conducted. You also heard Rob described as being incredibly paranoid in the rundown segment. There's no way someone that paranoid would just make up a story like this. No. I knew she was lying. I just needed a way to prove it. And luckily, I had one. In her interview, she told Rob that she called the police when she heard banging on the door. If the story was a complete fabrication, then this call would have never taken place. So I put in a Freedom of Information request to the Yorkshire Police, asking for everything they had on Kimber Fenner. A few weeks later, I got a response. They'd apparently received 999 calls from her on two separate occasions. The first was the 21st of January, 2009. In this call, Kimber told them there was an intruder in her home that was banging on her bedroom door. When the police arrived, they found Kimber shaken but unharmed. There was no sign of breaking or entering, and nothing was missing other than a video camera and a German Shepherd. The details of this call match perfectly with what Kimber described in her story, and proves, to me at least, that she was lying to me when I spoke to her. However, that was not the only 999 call she made. The second call was made to the police just after midnight on the 12th of November 2009. In this call, Kimber told the operator that there was someone banging on her back door that was trying to get in. When the police arrived, they found her locked in the bathroom, unharmed. This time, however, the glass of the back door was smashed, and there were bloodstains all over the living room, presumably from when the burglar cut themselves on broken glass. The police found the living room had been disturbed, with all the drawers and furniture having been overturned. However, there was no evidence that anything had actually been taken, as all her valuables were still there. The blood from the bloodstains was taken for DNA testing, however this did not return any matches. The case went cold shortly afterwards. Now, if you've been listening since the beginning, you might recognise that date, the 12th of November 2009. For those of you that haven't, I'll get you up to speed. On the 12th of November 2009, four sets of remains were found in and around Slater Woods. Two of these were the remains of Ben Walker and his friend Sam Hall, who had gone missing together in 2008, and who were the topic of last episode. Another set of remains belonged to Rob, the interviewer and producer of Down the Black Trail. They went missing in February 2009. The final set of remains was never identified. This set was different from the others. This body was much fresher than the others, with the time of death being estimated at 2 a.m. that morning, and the cause of death was identified as blood loss from a set of deep scratch marks on the body. I immediately noticed the connection here. This person's time of death was estimated at 2 a.m, and Kimber called the police that morning at 1:27 a.m. Additionally, her cause of death was blood loss, which matches the reports of bloodstains in the living room. But the most disturbing thing is this. When I went back to check over the reports from the 12th of November 2009, I realised where I recognised Kimber from. When these four remains were found, the police were trying desperately to identify all of them. As I've told you, three of them were identified quickly, but the final body never was. The police distributed a photo of this body to the press, so that anyone that recognised the body could come forward and help identify them. The report said that the police received plenty of tips, but all of them ended up being wrong. I think I know why now. I think it's because the person the body was identified as was still alive. Because this body had a striking resemblance to the person I spoke to over video call. This body looked just like Kimber Fenner.
Down the Black Trail is a University Radio York production starring James Persglove as the narrator, Colin Royt as Daniel Thompson, Jonathan Cook as Robert Marshall, and Sarah Gent as Kimber Fenner. Down the Black Trail was written, directed, produced and edited by James Persglove and produced by Colin Royt and Jonathan Cook.